Unafraid. Uninfluenced. Unleashed. You're listening to American Unleashed.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's edition of the American Unleashed, and I am your host, bringing you all kinds of special news and reports on what's going on in the world, and a lot of stories the media isn't going to tell you. And as we're going to do as the weeks go on, we're going to take the first little bit of the show and go over some news of the day, what's been going on the last week, what's happened here recently, and kind of give you also some stories that you probably will not see on the mainstream media, and I've got a couple of those today. So welcome. Hope you're having a great day. It is 72 degrees down here in the Ozark Mountains of Missouri. We are here in the heartland of America, part of what they love to call the flyover states. Yes, whenever they do get honest and want to call us that, that's what they refer to us as, the flyover states. In other words, unless we're a swing state, we're pretty much meaningless to the politicians. But we need to get our voice out there and let them know that we are anything but meaningless, and let them know how we feel about the world. Currently, all kinds of stuff in the news. Donald Trump, of course, always in the news. He is currently suing ABC and George Stephanopoulos, George Snuffleupagus, for slander. They went on and tried to allege about a rape case and all this other, which is not true. It is not at all. And this is where we get down to journalism versus sensationalism, because in the past, a journalist's duty, and it was a duty, a lot of them saw it similar to what doctors used to see their duty as. They were very solemn and serious about it, because all the journalist's job was to deliver the who, what, when, where, why, all those W's. And their opinion and their slant or their like or dislike of someone or something was not supposed to be part of it. They simply delivered the facts. And if you ever want to see anything, get on YouTube and watch some of the old broadcasts that Walter Cronkite used to give. He would give some really meaningful dialogue in his broadcasts. And it wasn't until the assassination of JFK, really, that you ever saw him break down emotionally and really get kind of personal about things. But before that, he and so many others would simply deliver the news. Good, bad, ugly, whatever it was, they would not put their own slander tilt on it. You wouldn't hear the slander tilt of producers or executives. You would simply get, as I said before, the who, what, when, where, and why. And here in a few weeks when we talk about the freedom of the press, we're going to get a lot more deep into that, because I've got an old Associated Press guide that they used to use back in World War II that we can talk about and use as kind of a reference. But they want to get sensationalist over this stuff, so they make these wild accusations and talk about these wild stories as if it were true when they have no proof of it. So hopefully Trump wins big on that one. Whether you like the guy or don't like the guy, they should not be telling lies about him, all right? If there's plenty of stuff out there, and like I said, I'm a supporter, but he is no messiah. He is not perfect in any way. He's got a lot of faults. This one is just straight up nonsense. And I hope he takes him to the cleaners and teaches a lot of the media a lesson about lying to the people. Also, excuse me, after a Supreme Court ruling, this is hysterical. After a Supreme Court ruling, Mexico vows not to take Texas migrants. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you heard that correctly. Let me read it again. After a Supreme Court ruling, Mexico vows not to take Texas migrants. So this is their backlash about the way that Texas wants to secure the border, as it should be secured. And I've said this before, I'll say it again. A wall is not a do not enter sign. A wall is a sign where you say, please use the door, and use it properly. And we need a secured border, people. I've got a story here coming up I'll tell you about in a minute, and you're going to understand why. Also, speaking about this, well, here's one of them. Not undocumented immigrant says that Trump is a racist, but he'd still vote for him. And in this story, they had a poll in there. Today we can never tell whether polls are real, whether polls are slanted, where they were done, how they were done, if they were even done, or that they just said, oh, well, here's what we want to report. But this poll found that Latino registered voters closely split between Trump and Biden. This is a huge swing, they claim, from the 2020 election. It's actually not. By the end of Trump's presidency, he had swung both Latino voters and black voters. His support in the black community had actually more than doubled from the time he took office till his, the end of his term. And so part of it is good news. Part of it is something where they say that it's closely split, but their claim of, well, that's a big swing from 2020. Well, we don't know that for sure because 2020 was a royal mess. And I don't know if we'll ever know for sure exactly what happened in the 2020 election. But that's a year we want to forget for many reasons. Also, in another story, the GOP has slammed the door on Scott Pressler, which means Pressler, at least to me, that means he's a pretty good guy, because today's GOP is kind of a ridiculous thing. A lot of sellouts and a lot of bureaucrats, a lot of people who've been in offices within the grand old party for far too long. Many of them sold out and have decided to just be part of the establishment problem. And so they shut the door on him, and part of it is because he was one of those key people in 2020 to push for the campaign known as Stop the Steal, where they were questioning all these places that would pull tubs of voter ballots out from under tables, and nobody knew where they came from. Bags of voting ballots would appear at 2 o'clock in the morning out of nowhere, and also that at these polling places where the ballots were being tabulated, windows were being covered up so people couldn't see what's going on. I'm sorry, folks, but you add all that up together, and there is a reason to be concerned, whether it was real or not, whether it happened the way they say it did or not. If all that kind of stuff is going on, you really kind of have to question it. And what have we been talking about so far? Question everything, especially when they tell you not to question. And by slamming the door on this and telling you that it was, and the line on the media is that, and this is where the sensationalism steps in instead of journalism, is they automatically say in the headlines that he was spreading conspiracy theories. Nothing of its conspiracy theories. It wasn't that he was taking one side or another. They're automatically labeling conspiracy theories because they don't like what he says. And that's the change. That's one of the things we're talking about when the media manipulates you, is they use these changes in terms and the way they deliver the news to automatically give you an assumption that somebody is guilty of something they have not been found guilty of. And therein lies the problem with the media we have today. But Pressler was also tried to organize a march and an action called that was supposed to be an anti-Sharia march, where we would say that one group of people, namely in this case Muslims, would not be able to enact Sharia that would override any of America's laws, whether it be national, state, county, city, municipality, any of that kind of stuff, which we've seen them do in other countries. They have it active in England and Germany and several other places over in Europe. The media will not tell you about it, but it is happening. I've got friends who are over there and say that there are certain neighborhoods, if you're not part of that, you don't go to, because there's no telling, especially women. They tell them they're not safe, and it's reality. It's been out there. Again, don't believe me. Go do the research. And once again, I tell you, the research starts by turning off your television, and the research starts outside of your comfort zone. Research starts by reading opinions you don't want to hear and you don't like. If all you're going to do is read opinions that agree with you and that you like, then, well, you're really kind of wasting your time. Also, there is a judge that has said that Fannie Willis can stay on the case in Georgia over Donald Trump, even with some of the radical statements she has made that show that she is horribly biased and has already taken her stance of guilt. And that's not a lawyer's job. That's not a prosecutor's job, folks. A prosecutor is supposed to go by the law. It's supposed to go by the evidence. And the evidence doesn't hold up here. It's strictly a witch hunt. It is a political witch hunt, nothing more, nothing less. And she should have been removed from the case because of that bias. But and then, of course, we get more of these quote-unquote experts, where a quote-unquote historian has now decided that his name is Michael Becloes, B-E-S-C-H-L-O-E-S. I'm not exactly sure. Becloes has decided that what Donald Trump is doing is nothing short of fascist rhetoric, when, again, that's really his opinion. It's not anything grounded in actual history. It actually completely when you compare it to accurate history, his opinion of this falls apart very quickly. There's now another, and we've got in another city another lawsuit. This one not start with Trump, but a lawsuit in claims in that New York City Mayor Adams demanded oral sex for a colleague in their career in 1993. I don't know how long this story is going to last because it calls out one of the left's major helpers in New York City. So I'm amazed it made the news as it is. But Mayor Adams is being charged in saying that in the lawsuit that he did some very inappropriate things back in 93. We'll have to see what comes out of that one. Also, here's one the media will not tell you about, that in O'Fallon, Missouri, right here in our home state, this past Sunday, Jose Barrio stabbed two people at a laundromat in O'Fallon, Missouri. He was in the country illegally. He'd come in through the Texas border in 2021. And before coming to the U.S., he had actually killed several people in Honduras with a machete. And there was no, I mean, you can go to the airport and you get screened and you get x-rayed and you get checked and your luggage gets searched and all kinds of stuff. Well, right now, thanks to the Democrats, anybody and everybody is walking on through the border as if they're walking into a fairgrounds. I'm surprised they don't have balloons and fireworks and all that kind of stuff for them going off, but they're getting all kinds of benefits. We're going to talk about that coming up in the next several weeks. Benefits that they are getting that are being forced upon us or being demanded out of us the way whether we want them or not, and we're going to get into that. And got to warn you about the latest buzz term in the media. Not only do they pop it up with fake news, but now it's AI generated. Oh, well, that picture and that circumstance, that was AI generated, and we don't think that's real. The latest part coming in from photos supposedly taken at a Target that depict a mannequin with devil horns, and I'm talking big devil horns, and a child supposedly wearing a pentagram T-shirt. Now, I don't know if these are real or not. We have not seen evidence one way or the other for sure whether they are. We've seen a lot of stuff from Target in the last 4 or 5 or 6 years that are close to 10 that really makes you question their ethics and morality. But I do find it a bit of a stretch that they would go this far, especially when it's getting ready to be Easter instead of Halloween. If it were during the Halloween season, maybe. But even then, I think that would be a bit of a stretch. So it's very possible these are AI-generated. But one of this does bring up is about a week ago, there was a huge report on some pictures of Trump with some supposed supporters, as they said. And it turns out that it was actually supposedly AI-generated. And what they did was when they got on TV and started talking about this, they said, well, there's no way any of this can be true. I mean, we know black people don't support Trump. On the contrary, as I mentioned earlier, the support for Trump from the black community had doubled at least by the time he finished his term, and it has still been growing, folks. The more the media has been trying to bash and destroy and use these obvious smear tactics, I mean, they are blindingly obvious. The people are waking up and seeing it, and they're taking a second look on their own, which is what I ask you to do. I will never ask you to simply trust what I tell you. I will never say that, well, I said it, so therefore you can take it to the bank. That's end of story. I'm not going to do that. I'm not one of the other talking heads who does that. I challenge you to check the facts. But again, I'm telling you that most of the facts you will find are probably outside of your comfort zone. They're probably from opinions you don't like or don't want to hear. If all you're doing is listening to people who say the same things you do and believe the same way you do, you're really wasting your time. And you're not doing the world any good either. Because you need to grow and develop. And if we're going to grow and develop, we need to figure out how to operate outside of our comfort zone. And it's really that way with a lot of things, not just in politics, but in life, in as simple of things as exercise, diet. If you want to get better, if you want to do better, and this goes for people, if you're out there and you're suffering with addiction, you know, And as a former alcoholic and addict, I can tell you that as soon as I go outside my comfort zone is where I really started to find new life and to start finding a new way around those terrible parts of my life and getting that out of my life. And now I've got over 5 years clean and sober. I don't think about it. I don't go to meetings. I don't count days. I just decided it's no longer a part of my life. It's like, well, you know, I didn't go skydiving either, so I'm not doing that. Well, now I'm not drinking anymore, so I can go to Wranglers and listen to the band and eat a good dinner. And I just choose to have a glass with mix of Sprite and lemonade and enjoy the night, enjoy the music. It all depends on what you want to do with your life, but I'm going to tell you right now, growth starts outside of your comfort zone. You're never going to grow if you simply decide to live in your comfort zone, and you're not doing your community a lot of good inside your comfort zone. So some people need that. Some people have to be in that. I understand it. But a lot of us really do need to step out and become more aware and more aggressive in growing in life. And so I'm asking you to read books, read articles that you don't necessarily want to hear, and consider you might be wrong. I do it all the time. I look at stuff and I said, well, was I wrong about this? Was I wrong about that? And I read constantly about history, biographies, firsthand accounts. And at some point, we're going to, and here today, I'm going to bring up a couple of examples of some of that, because today our topic is history and civics. So a lot of you out there will say, well, Stormy, I know how to study history. I know how to do this or that, don't I? Well, do you? Do you really understand it? Because I ran into somebody the other day who claimed to have had a history degree from school, but I won't lie, I told him he ought to call the school back and get his money back, because his ideas on history were about as off accuracy as it gets. And for many, many reasons he named, including his comparisons, and also the way he looked at different things in throughout history. But I've got to tell you, with what's going on in the world, with how we're moving away, I mean, what happened to civility? What happened to open, honest, constructive debate? I remember early on in the internet where you could go online and you could find somebody who believed differently than you did, and you'd have an amazing conversation back and forth. Even before the internet, I remember having amazing conversations about religion with friends of mine. I had a friend who was an ordained Mormon minister, and we had some absolutely brilliant conversations about religion and talked to people in history who we would have some incredibly brilliant discussions about the war between the states or World War II in the Pacific Theater, which is kind of my niche in history that I enjoy reading about. And I'm going to talk about one of those books here in a little while to give you an idea of some of the stuff you can study that really does a good job. And I'll just name the book right now. It's called 30 Seconds Over Tokyo. It is a live, firsthand account of what happened in that time when a organized bombing raid was set on Japan during World War II. And if you've seen the original movie Midway, they go through this. It was called the Doolittle Raid. And it happens during the opening credits of the movie Midway with Charlton Heston and Peter Fonda. And it was even though it didn't necessarily do a lot of damage over there, it was a huge morale booster here at home and for our troops abroad, very big. And of course, it led up to the victory at Midway. And someday we can get into a whole show about that side of things, because I love talking about that subject. But that firsthand account that you get from people who were there, or people who have worked in an industry and know things firsthand. As I said last week, I had a discussion with an old friend from my hometown who I told her, I said, I spent six and a half, 7 years working in the political realm. And just because I said something she didn't like, she says, oh, well, I guess you didn't work deep enough. So she was allowing her rhetoric to control more of how she thought than even with the possibility. She didn't even consider the possibility for 1 second that I might have been right. And so it was really kind of scary having that conversation with a grown individual. But we've got this subject this week of history and civics. And one of the things we've got to talk about is how to study history. And you think, well, that's easy. You just go read a book and you do all this and do it. Well, do you? Let me give you three quick rules on history and studying history. Number one, when you study history, you have to study it through the eyes of the era. So if I'm reading a book from World War II, I'm not going to look at it as if I were reading a story about what's going on between Israel and Palestine today in that conflict is a different era. Communications were different. Basically, Morse code was there. There were telephones, but they were not the utilized service that they even were 20, 30 years ago. It was hard to find one, and it was hard to find one that worked in that area. Plus, you know, like I said, my study in the Pacific, you didn't necessarily have telephones going ship to ship and all this stuff. A lot of times it was done with light signals and flag signals and the Morse code. So you have to be able to look at it. I remember one thing I've shown to young people that I've worked with in the past. It's an old Superman cartoon, the Max Fleischer era, where they didn't have phones. Lois Lane was still using a typewriter, and to try to call ahead and let them know there was a problem with the train, they had to use Morse code on a type to from one train station to the next. And when I show this to these kids, they're just like, wow. They're like, well, why don't you just pick up a cell phone? No, they didn't have all that back then. So you have to look at something through the eyes of the era. You have to understand that things were different in that age, because if you look at something from the past, there's a term for it. It's called presentism. If you look at the past through today's eyes, it's called presentism. Presentism, and it basically, it really gives you a very short-sighted look, because when we do that, everything that was wrong seems 10 times more wrong, and it seems like, what in the world were these people thinking? We talked on the first episode and last episode about slavery. Today, we know without question that slavery is wrong. But from one point in time backwards in time, slavery was normal. It was, as much as we look at owning appliances today, owning slaves was seen as the same thing. Back then, it was seen as quote-unquote normal, whatever the heck that is. So when you look at an era in history, you have to be willing to look at it through the eyes of the era and understand how things worked then. And you cannot compare it to today, because if you do, it gets into a great, horrible mess. And when you see some of these talking heads and these talk show hosts talk about history, you'll see that nothing ever seems right, because they always never look at it through the eyes of the era. The second big rule is understanding that the winners of wars write and rewrite the history books. Now, what I mean by this is, if a nation goes in and conquers a territory, well, from then on, they write the new history books of what did happen, and a lot of times they will go back and rewrite the old history books to glorify themselves and vilify the people they defeated. Even if the people they defeated were the good guys, they will go back and they will rewrite this history. So that's why I'm always encouraging you to find older books. The older, the better. And, of course, firsthand accounts, biography, all that kind of stuff, the people who were there, who knew it firsthand, are the best. But to always make sure you find these older books that have these things in them that might have been changed. And if you really want to see something crazy, find a book from around 1910, 1920 about the war between the states and compare it to a book today. It is almost a night and day difference. That book from 1910, you're more than likely to get a lot more truth out of. You're liable to get a lot more fact out of. And the books of today, you're likely to get a lot more spin and a lot more of what I'm talking about. And the third rule is that, as I was getting ready to say, unless the truth comes out, the lies just get worse. And that's the truth, and we're seeing that today. We see it in short term today, thanks to the internet and all this kind of thing. They will air a story on Monday, and by Friday they're talking about how much more, even though it's not a big deal or it's not a major story or this kind of that, they will blow it out of proportion, and by Friday, my gosh, it's the worst thing since Godzilla took out Boston. Yeah, I know that was a movie, but still, it's something a lot of people have seen, and we can kind of understand by seeing. Pop culture can be a good way to visually reference something, so you can say, well, yeah, it's worse than when Godzilla took out Boston or Tokyo or wherever the movie is you've seen it. And they will overdo these. They will overplay it. They will spin. You say, well, what do you mean by spin? Well, spin is where you take some facts and you don't necessarily lie, but you say it in such a way to where it takes your side. You're not really lying, but you're not totally telling the truth either, because you're just deciding what you... It's kind of like a cherry-picking kind of thing through verbal discussion. And so when somebody spins something, either in print or in speech, you know that what they're doing is they're spinning it to fit their agenda. And you need to keep an eye out on that today, because let me tell you, baby, that one is everywhere. And what we've got here, again, is freedom for versus personal responsibility, which are kind of the same thing. Because we do have the freedom to study the way we want. We have the freedom to look for these books and to search for these things. And some of this stuff is disappearing. If you see somebody online, well, our rights are disappearing right and left, and somebody says, oh, well, please point it out. Tell us which one of the rights are gone. Well, it's not necessarily that they're gone, but they're constantly being messed with. And one of the reasons I can tell you, back after 2001, after the 9/11 attacks, the officials in Washington came up with something called the Patriot Act. And when they did, they were very proud of it. Proud of it to the point where they published a book that had the entire Patriot Act in it. And I remember seeing the shelf at Barnes & Noble when you walked in. It took up a whole table. They had copies stacked on the floor underneath it, copies stacked on top. I bet there were 100 and 200 copies of it right there. I remember the visual of it very, very clearly. But you go try to find one of those online. You try to find one in a library. You try to find a copy of that book, that original book, anywhere. And unless you bought one back then and you've still got it, the chances of you finding that book are slim and none, because I can tell you, I go on eBay, I go on Amazon, I go on half.com and a lot of these other spots, and I try to find these things once in a while, and they ain't there. And for the numbers that they printed of that silly thing, we ought to be able to build a wall out of those things. But they decided, oh my gosh, we can't actually tell the people what we did. Oh my word, can you imagine? I know we were proud of that, but ooh, we can't totally tell them the truth, can we? And all of a sudden, trying to find that book is tougher than finding the Loch Ness Monster being ridden by Bigfoot while singing Ave Maria. That's what I'm saying, it's impossible to find it. And what the media does is they have for years, and this goes back, a big push of it goes back to World War II, because World War II, they learned a lot of things. And by they, I mean the enemies of freedom, by the people, by the corrupt, the establishment machine, whatever you want to call it. Doesn't matter. We use these names. One of the ones I can't stand is the military-industrial complex, because it's been so blown out and so misused and so overused, it no longer really has a good solid definition to that term. But basically, the media will use these things to deceive you, and it's been going on a long time. And in World War II, one of the things they used very well in the American media was morale. They wanted to keep morale high. Well, the enemies noticed that, and so since then they have been doing anything and everything they can to pollute our media. And we've seen from then to now what they do. We saw a huge dip in it in Vietnam and in Korea. In Vietnam you had all this stuff, and agreed, it was probably something we should not have gotten involved with. I will not deny that for one moment. However, to vilify it all to the point where our veterans are coming home and they're being threatened and spat on and called baby killers and all this other stuff, when unfortunately, and I hate to use this term as well, they were just following orders. But that's what the military is. And the people that should have been gone after were the decision makers around that, not the soldiers. The soldiers were just the pawns there. It's the decision makers. You can go back to another story from the World War II era in the Pacific and talk about the USS Indianapolis, the ship that delivered the bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And for years, they worked very, very hard to blame the captain of that ship for the sinking of the ship, when in reality it was the bureaucrats who held on to information far longer than they should have, when they could have sent out an alert to search for these people. And awesome book out there called USS Indianapolis. I'll have the name and show you the cover of it on the Facebook here sometime soon. And please visit our Facebook page, American Unleashed. And on any of the topics, you're welcome to ask questions, throw in your opinion. We're going to try to eventually have a segment on here, hopefully 5 or 10 minutes a week, where we can go through your comments and questions and do the best we can to answer them for you, if you're going to be civil. going to tell you right now, if all you're going to do is pop in there and call me names, or you pop on there and put up some ridiculous meme calling me names and then block us from replying against you, it's going to be removed. It's not going to be discussed because you're not willing to discuss. But if you really have legitimate questions or a legitimate opinion on it, I want to hear them. Get on there and let's talk about it. The discussion, open discussion, is what we need. And right now, that's being taken away from us, folks. If you think it's not, you go try to have a political rally in Washington, D.C., and unless it meets some very specific criteria, including who you're and what you're supporting, they're going to tell you no. Look how many rallies that have been held since January 6, 2021. Almost nothing. Donald Trump and other Republicans have had to hold rallies everywhere else because they are looking for excuses in Washington, D.C. to say no. Oh, they're just violent people and all this. But, folks, once again, the history takes a turn because you can go through and look at, and I'll give you a good example. Remember the Women's March that happened in Washington, D.C.? The one where Madonna said that she wanted to blow up the White House when Donald Trump was in it, which for some reason she didn't get arrested for. If you or I were to make that statement publicly, we'd have Secret Service on our door in a heartbeat. But somehow this celebrity woman thing could make this statement in front of all these women, and she gets cheered for it, and nobody pays her a visit, and nothing happens around it. They say there was an investigation, but hey, if that happened with one of us, we would disappear for a while. Secret Service would come to our door, and we wouldn't show up to work for 2 weeks or more for a statement like that. But for the Hollywood elites and for the other elites, it's a different set of rules. And I'm not talking about the rich. I'm just talking about the influential, the people who take certain sides. They have a specific attitude towards us, like I was talking about with the flyover states earlier. But if you look at that rally and you look at what happened there and you look at the aftermath and you look at all the garbage and the trash and the signs and the those pink hats, I won't tell, say what they, well, they were vagina hats. Pink vagina hats, and they were all kinds of people wearing them. You could see pictures after that thing was over, after the people had left, all this garbage laying all over the streets, all over the lawns of all these different areas around the Capitol and where they had this rally. It was horrible. It was disgusting. The fast food wrappers, the cigarettes, the drug paraphernalia, all kinds of stuff everywhere. Yet you can go in every year. There is a rally in D.C. where basically motorcycles roll into D.C., Patriot Guard motorcycles and the Patriot riders go into D.C. And if you look at the grounds at the places they have their activities in the aftermath, it's cleaner than it was when they got there. It's cleaner than the city of Washington keeps it. They go in and they clean up after themselves. They throw things away properly. They dispose of the signs and everything else properly. You don't find a ton of drug paraphernalia. Plus, you don't have the number of arrests. At any of these leftist rallies, you will have a great number of arrests of people who want to start trouble or start looting or commit violence against people who come to speak a different voice. But at a lot of these Patriot rallies, you don't get any of that. And when you do, it is the ones coming in to protest them and attack them. Very few of them are. And let's not bring up January 6, 2021. That's a whole other subject, a whole different type of protest. It is not like the others, despite what people want to try to claim. But we will talk about it at some point. Well, we could talk about it today, because we were talking about civics and civility. Also, not just from the left, but I've got to say something to the folks on the religious right. All the faith in the world does not make your faith a fact, because faith is based on your belief, even though you have a lack of facts to back it up. That's what faith is. And I genuinely, truly want you to have the faith that helps you in your life and makes you feel better in life and makes you feel more settled and right with what you do in life. I want you to have that faith, because here in America we have that faith, freedom for that faith, like no other country. But don't act as if your faith is some version of fact, because it's not. And you just need to understand that facts and reality, historical facts, accurate history, science, and all that kind of stuff really does take precedence because there's evidence for it. We can go again back to the debate between Neil deGrasse Tyson and Kenneth Ham, where at the end, the last question was, what would it take to change your mind on any of the subjects we talked about today? And Neil deGrasse Tyson gave the proper answer. He said, evidence. And Kenneth Ham said, nothing. Nothing will change my mind. Well, then there's a problem. You've got to be willing to look at other things and say, okay, is this right? Is this wrong? And if for nothing else, and you prove it is correct in how you feel, then doesn't that secure your faith even more? But if it's different, maybe you can learn something new. Maybe you can change things and make it a better thing. So there are issues on both sides of this political spectrum that we need to address, and that's why when we talk about politics and talk about these issues, we need to stick straightly to the facts. And honestly, I'm just going to say it, keep your faith to yourself. You can have your faith, you can have your opinions based in your faith, that's fine, but when you start to use them in a manner that would force your faith on someone else, you are violating someone else's rights, violating someone else's freedom, and here we are 100% about freedom first. And remember, freedom stops at someone else's freedoms. Your freedoms do not override theirs, and theirs don't override yours. That's why the great United States of America is so great, is that we have this ability more than anyone ever has. Yes, other countries have freedom, but not in the area we do, not at the level we do. And we don't have that level of like we used to. That's slowly being chiseled away at, bit in pieces. And you get fact versus truth. Fact is, it has evidence, it has proof behind it, it has research behind it. It's set in stone until you dig a little deeper and realize the stone might be a statue, if you get my drift. Truth is something that can be altered with the changing of how things go. Fact is a little more set in where it's at and a kind of a finality, if you will. But there's nothing wrong with truth. There's nothing wrong with faith. You just have to be willing to understand that someone else's experience and the facts and reality might take a little precedence over the faith side, and be willing to not necessarily accept it and believe in it, but be willing to allow other people to believe in it. First-hand experience is a big thing. First-hand experience and first-hand knowledge are something some people have that others don't over specific subjects. And you need to understand that has credibility behind it. And if all you can come back with is the rhetoric and the same stuff you hear from the talking heads on either side of the aisle, then, well, I'm sorry, the first-hand experience does take precedence because the person's actually lived it. They've been through it. We talked about presentism, but, you know, if we're going to talk about some of these changes and some of these things they force upon us, let's talk about this term that's used in social media, community standards. Community standards changes like the employee roster at a McDonald's, it would seem like, on some of these social media platforms. And a lot of it is being done to train, program, and herd people through their way of thinking. So, like on the Yahoo.com, when they have news stories posted up there, or what they claim to be news stories, if you go to comment on it, certain comments are automatically rejected. And I'm not talking about using foul language. I'm not talking about accusations or anything else. Sometimes if you say something they just don't like, they don't allow the comment. And that goes against the whole principle of freedom of speech. And again, when we get into the constitutional amendments, one of the things we need to talk about is freedom of speech versus freedom to ask for a redress of grievances. They are very, very similar and very, very different, but we're going to talk about why they are different. And, of course, we'll talk about some of their similarities as well. But understand that freedom of speech was not just intended to protect us from government. It was also intended to give an overall rule of thumb for American society, where we have the freedom of speech unless you're violating the rights of others through slander or yelling fire in a crowded theater or things like that. As long as you're not harming others, you should be allowed to say whatever, no matter how accurate or how absurd. The freedom should still be there. Now you can go a little bit further into that with corporate standards, like we talked about last week, being able to say this, not being able to say that for a company you work for, but that should be spelled out within their corporate bylaws. But in a public setting, it's different. In a public setting, like on the comments for Yahoo.com or on social media, free speech is supposed to be a part of what happens. And as far as the part about, well, it's supposed, freedom of speech was supposed to, and Trace Adkins wrote a book several years ago, and he brought up this statement, and it's a good attempt, but it wasn't quite accurate, because where we have the freedom to contradict and to speak out against our elected officials and their issues is a little more falling under the line of freedom for redress of grievances than it is freedom of speech, because that one is very specific in saying that we're specifically stating that we don't like a certain politician for this and that reason, we do not like a specific issue for this and that reason, and we are speaking out as citizens towards these elected officials. And so that part of it is a little bit more where we are supposed to be protected from government retaliation because of our opinions. And it was during the Obama administration that we saw one of the most blatant violations of this, when the administration used the IRS to go after certain political groups like the Tea Party and the Patriot Riders and several other groups, where the IRS was being used as a blunt weapon to attack them with audits and several other pieces. But like I said, when we get into the First Amendment, we'll get a little deeper into that. But social media, their standards and practices, their community standards, as I've stated, will change back and forth between people, and that is where the side of it comes up that's wrong. They say, well, this is their own page and they can decide this. Well, that's fine. They can decide that, but if they're going to publish community standards, they need to abide by those standards themselves. Or repost and say, hey, it's our page, we will decide what we like and what we don't like, instead of just coming out lying and saying, oh, we're about free speech and we want both sides heard and blah, blah, blah. Instead, just come out and say, hey, we don't like Donald Trump, and if you're a supporter of his, this may not be the place for you. Or whatever the issue is. Because like I said, I've heard some people use a very slanderous term. Please forgive me. It's a variation on the term retard, where they call a Trump-tard or something like that. And I've seen that where people have been reported for that and absolutely nothing. And I've done it with people myself because I find it a very offensive term for people who obviously don't have family members or have not been associated with people with special needs. And I've been told that, no, that's just free speech. That's them exercising their free speech. Nothing wrong with our community standards. But I've seen people and I've known people who have used the term libtard. Again, apologies for having to use it, but that's the term that was used. And they were sanctioned heavily. They got suspensions from the social media. So why is one right and one wrong? Well, the only thing that's different between the two is who you support and whose agenda you are backing. It doesn't have anything to do, and it automatically really does violate their own community standards to do it that way, but they don't seem to care. They do it one way or the other. And it's being done this way and using political correctness and all these things to make you more obedient, to make you think differently about how you're going to speak. Oh, I better not use this term. Oh, I better not say that. Oh, I better change the way I want to say this. And as you do this, the more you do this, the more you change the way someone thinks. Because then they automatically start to censor themselves and automatically start to edit themselves. And it's not in a good way. It's in such a way where you're trying to program them to agree with you rather than to learn more and grow more. And it's just what happens. You can talk about conspiracy theories, you can talk about tinfoil hats, that's fine. But it's the truth on, and it's fact on what these things do. They're doing this to change the way people think. And it goes on constantly with these social media platforms. So you need to be, I'm not saying, you know, attack anything. I'm not saying just quit doing things just for this reason. But be aware of why they do them. And when you're aware of why they're doing this, you're more awake and you're more active and you're more educated about how and why this is done to you and to others. So just keep an eye on it. Please watch how they tell you to do it. Watch how they word headlines. Watch how they word these responses, because the words, like we talked about last week, words are very, very important and very powerful. And one of the ways, I'll tell you one of the things that have been taken away from us, the letter to the editor for the town paper used to be one of the most powerful tools the average American citizen had to get their voice out for the masses. It was a huge part of communities. And I remember 20, 30 years ago when I sent my first one in, actually probably longer than that, probably closer to 35 years, the people I had come up to me and talk to me and say how courageous it was and all this. And I didn't do it to be courageous. I didn't do it for accolades or anything like that. I did it because I felt the issue needed to be addressed. And yet it was something big. And it was at the time. And unfortunately, these social media platforms have now given everybody the platform to speak out, but that also has drowned out the specialness of it. And we've seen the slow and steady destruction of print media. The town paper used to be one of the most important parts of an individual's life. They'd pick it up in the morning, they'd read through and find out what was going on, who was doing what with who, what the new policies were. People running for office were very straightforward with how they felt about issues. So this time of year, you'd pick up a newspaper about school boards, and you'd have a whole section about all the different people and where they stood on all the different issues. Today, it's a quagmire. You go in and you look at it, and you're like, well, who supports what? Because all they have on their social media platforms are people who like them. Oh, isn't this an outstanding person? Wouldn't this make for a great leader? And you don't find anything about issues. And so, yes, things are actually being taken away from us. They're just being done over time in a subtle way where you don't notice until, well, it's gone and you read a history book and you're going, wow, this guy wrote a letter to his newspaper and he got all this stuff done. What? How in the world did that happen? Well, it used to be a big deal. And by taking that from communities, it has disenfranchised a lot of people in a lot of communities to be more a group of sheep than necessarily a group of citizens. And that's what they want to happen, is they want us to be a group that is more controllable. And that's why they pit us against each other with all these headlines the way they do and reacting the way they do and telling us what they want to hear instead of just telling us the truth, telling us what happened. History has changed things over the years. Technology has changed things. We talked about it last week, and I believe the week before, how a president, say 40 years ago, could put a policy into effect, and sometimes it would take 3, 4, 5, 10 years for that policy to really take effect and show its results. And what we used last week, I believe, might have mentioned it the week before too, was the fact that Ronald Reagan put certain policies in position, and it took long enough for them to make it through and work their way through the system, that when they did, we ended up running into a budget surplus that the Bill Clinton administration was able to take credit for. Bill Clinton did not do it. He's not the one who built that. Someone else did. Because back then, things took time. We didn't have the internet. We did not have immediate communications. I mean, the basic telephone on the wall in the home was the quickest form there was. And even that took time because, well, then you had to call 50 different people to get a word out about someone, because even before fax machines, that's the best you could do, is you could just do that way. And then you had public radio. And by public radio, I just don't mean the public radio services provided by the government. I'm talking about like this station right here. You had radio stations people could come on to and address things, and they could get to a mass of people. But when you couldn't do that, you just had to keep dialing phone numbers. And it took time. Nowadays, we have the information superhighway, we've got cell phones, we've got Skype and Zoom and all this other stuff, and now when a president does something, it can show immediate results. But sometimes it does take longer. Let's talk about a few years ago, after 2020, we got hit with all these supply chain shortages. And after a while, you know, we were like, well, everybody's back to work, why do we still have supply chain shortages? Well, then all of a sudden they have this big, huge news story about a ship getting stuck in a canal. And it was blocking all the other ships from cutting through the canal, and it, to the point where they, it was like shutting down O'Hare Airport. If you ever, if you've ever seen what happens when they shut down the O'Hare Airport in Chicago, I mean, it puts a gridlock on all air traffic all over the country and the world almost. Several years ago, there was a fire up there. I don't know if you remember, and my father and I were getting ready to travel, but because of that, all kinds of flights had been delayed and put off and everything, to the point where we almost drove to our destination because they were telling us, oh, well, we don't know when planes are going to be flying back on schedule again. We can, you can sit in the airport or you can go to a hotel and we'll call you whenever things happen, but it might be 1, 2, 3 days. But even from then till now, things have altered and changed to the point where communication works so much quicker and decisions are made so much quicker that they've run through the system so much faster that things get done quicker. So we saw things that Donald Trump started that he could see the results of within his own first term that we would never, ever have seen during Reagan or Carter or Nixon or Ford or anything before that, because then it took time. And if you really want to go back to the days back in the 1800s, I mean, you don't even have telephones. People are having to run things around on the Pony Express. So then it's really backed up. So time and technology changes how these things get done and how certain people can take credit for what has been done by others. And that is another big part of studying history, is you need to understand how technology and communication have changed throughout history and how policies or news stories get across from one to another. And so that's just a big, important thing that you need to look at. Again, when you study something, you study it through the eyes of the era. You do not study it with today's eyes or ears. You study and you think about what it would have been like to live in that time and live in the situations they lived in and understand what was normal back then. Might be outrageously absurd today, but back then it was considered part of what happened. We've seen a horrible breakdown of civil discussion and debate into, honestly, just a bunch of reactionary name-calling. People who just, I was talking about Yahoo News the other day. I went and commented on one of it, and one of the statements back, you're stupid. And I'm thinking, wow, there's an intellectual retort. I bet you really got, you did well in your high school debate team with that one. How many points did you get at the debate on that response when you used it? And another was, go back to your meth lab, MAGA. And I'm sitting here thinking, can people no longer have civil discussions about issues? Is it really that hard? Are we really that stuck in a spot where we're so convinced of our own opinions that we refuse? Mark Twain once said that it's easier to fool someone than it is to educate them once they're already fooled. And he's right. Look at people today. They're set in their ways on what they've heard from their television, and they refuse to change. One more thing I want to go through with studying history is a technique about, and what I call it, the diagramming a book. Now, this is very, very useful with history books, with biographies, with firsthand accounts. It can be done with fiction. It can be done with, like, math and science stuff. It's more difficult, and it's a bigger explanation. But on the general idea of just books over social studies, history, biography, it's really pretty simple. And what you need is you need a highlighter. You need a composition book. Remember those little black and white checkered composition books we use as kids? And then you need three different color pens. And the pens, it doesn't matter what color. You can use green, blue, and black. You can use red, blue, and black, or whatever combination you want for your own personality. But what you do is you start in the book, and each chapter you go through and you number the paragraphs. So in chapter 1, paragraph 1, chapter 2, paragraph 1, and you start over as you hit the chapters or subchapters. What this does is it gives you a reference that you can refer to later in this composition book when you're taking notes. You can look in your notes for chapter 9, paragraph 4, subsection 6, or whatever, and you can find out a specific piece. But basically what you do is you go through, and as you number those paragraphs and you go through to read the book again, you use the highlighter to highlight the specific points within that paragraph that are important. And then in the composition, you take notes that are in more of your style of thinking and writing, and maybe how you would have said it rather than the PhD who wrote the book. You're going to write it a little more succinctly, a little more easy to understand. And so you do it in your own notes. Now, what you do sometimes is, if you're not sure if your assessment of the paragraph is correct or not, you can find a teacher or a professor or somebody who's knowledgeable in that to help make sure you are. But either way, it helps you understand that paragraph and that part of the story better. And sometimes it does take time. But let me tell you, when it comes to learning, this is one of the best ways in the world to learn about history and social studies, biography, because you're taking that paragraph and you're putting it in a way that you yourself can understand. And a lot of times those will be shorter, so that composition book should cover the book that you're reading as far as your notes go, unless you're somebody that just makes an insane number of notes on anything and everything. And the different color pens are for, you've got one that gives you your basic notes, and then you've got others that come in and give you extra notations. So like when I make reference to something that was said by George Carlin or Dennis Miller or Mark Twain, I write that in a different color because it's not something that's in the book, but it's something that has direct correlation to the specific of that paragraph and what you're talking about. And if you do this, I have given these instructions to countless young people, high school and college, and it has vastly improved their grades, vastly improves their understanding of subjects, and we'll do it for anybody. And you could do it at home. You can go buy these composition books at like Walgreens during after the school's after school sale for like 99 cents a piece. I remember one time I went in there and I bought like 20 of them for $10 at a Walgreens after school had started. They had a bunch of these composition books left. But get you some of these good gel pens, get them in different colors, get you some highlighters to highlight the points in the book, and you can use different color highlighters for different color issues that you want. You can use one color for a direct quote, you can use another color for specific numbers and statistics and things like that, and you can use another for just when something gives you a specific definition of something. They describe something, a word or a term that you will know you will need to learn if you want to study that subject. This is also great for those of you who are studying psychology, sociology, criminology. This is a great way to study. And gives you a reference. So that composition book is now your personal reference, your own personal guide. I forget what we used to call those things. The yellow books they were the short synopsis of classic stories. Oh, good grief. I'll remember it after I get off the air. But it was an easy way to just go through and say, oh, well, here's what really happened. And later on, you can use those notes to go back and study a book without necessarily going through the entire book. You have your own notes in your own ways, and you're more likely to remember where those points are in your notes if you've done all this yourself. So it's a great way to study, great way to learn. And so this week we've touched on a lot of things when it comes to history and civics and about the talking heads and what they've done to us. And the talking heads are another big part of the problem, folks. And the talking heads, be it from politics to television to radio to movies to sports, I mean, ESPN, when it started, to fill time, they would give darts tournaments from Dublin, Ireland, or you'd see a major softball game, or all kinds of just crazy sports. Well, now, look at what ESPN is. It's just one talk show after another with all these talking heads, with all these opinions, and tons of them are from people who have never actually worked in that specific sport other than, oh, I played in high school. Oh, I've written about it a lot. Well, unless you've done it, you really can't be considered much of an expert. But they do, and that's given a lot of people a false sense of authority over situations and over issues and over subjects. And that's what social media has done to us as well, has given a lot of people a false sense of intelligence and intellect over a subject that really they're not that educated about. They've heard the rhetoric, and they parrot the rhetoric, and they think that makes them an expert. And that's just, it's crazy to go at it from that level. But this week, I'm challenging you to study better, study smarter. Use this technique of how to diagram a book. And if you have more questions about that, please say so on the Facebook. be more than happy to give you that formula again, because it does work very, very well. I've used it on biographies. I've used it on psychology books, history books, social studies. One of the things I really wanted to get to today that falls within this realm, in my opinion, is this new idea for a social justice score that individuals are going to be labeled with, much like what we have the credit score, which, if you don't know, a credit score is a really messy, nonsensical number that is more used for the help of the banksters and the elite and the establishment than it has any help to the regular citizen at all. There's a lot of parts of it that hold you back. But now they want to give you a social justice score based on how you think politically and how you think about social issues. And these are the same people who are running the media and running these social media platforms. They want to be able to judge you and label you with this score based on how well you obey and how well you believe in the narrative and how well you're carrying on the narrative, rather than anything based in facts or accurate history. This guy went and read an extra history book. We're going to lower that score because he decided to educate himself rather than relying on his television. And what could this be used for? It obviously will be used as a label to judge you on how credible you are in what you say in life and what you say in politics, but how far are they going to carry it? Will it carry over to things like, the old joke in World War II, okay, comrade, do you have your papers to travel? Well, you know, he's not high on that social justice score. Maybe he needs to stay home a little more. Or maybe they'll cross it over with a credit score, and if your social justice score isn't high enough, you're going to have a lot of trouble getting a bank loan for that home or that car or that business. What are they going to do with this? How is this going to be used as a weapon politically? Because we've seen left and right, both sides, how they like to use all these different things as political weapons. And someday we're going to get into that. I'm going to put that down in here. And we're going to go have a whole show on what the politicians and the media and different people use as these political battering rams and blunt objects to beat you over the head with. So, again, I'm challenging you. Read your books. Study up on your subjects. Do not back down when somebody says that your firsthand experience isn't good enough and that the rhetoric that they're parroting from their television is more important, because don't even mess with them. As soon as you hear that, as soon as you understand that's where they're coming from, just cut the conversation off. Please, you're only going to aggravate yourself. And like the saying goes, you can't teach a pig to sing. And there's also the one about the playing chess with a pigeon. Not only can you really not actually win the game, that more than likely the parrot's just going to knock the pieces off the deal and poop on the board. So don't waste your time with some. Put the information out there as best you can. Be yourself. Do not be herded. Do not be programmed. Learn to operate outside your comfort zone. Learn to learn outside your comfort zone. And learn to live outside your comfort zone, because life is better that way. If you take chances and take risks and say, well, I'm going to do this that I never did. I'm going to try something new. I'm going to go to a restaurant where I've always had the same dish, and I'm going to try the meatloaf this time. And I know it seems like something little, but as you challenge yourself and as you change and as you adapt and grow and you have new experiences that are enjoyable, you will do it more often. And this is good, and it means you're growing and you're developing and you're becoming a little better person today than you were yesterday. And so that's my open challenge to you this week. And as always, the open challenge we always put forth to you and everyone else is to put freedom first. In anything and everything you do, when it comes to political or social issues, think about that. Think about, is this putting freedom first overall the way it is supposed to be here in the United States of America? If it is, go for it. If it's not, take another look at it. See what is wrong that puts it in that category and what it would take to put freedom first. Because that freedom first is about the only real way, the only real way we are truly going to fix this nation on every single subject there is out there. So believe in yourself, believe in you, believe in the power that you have to change and the power that you have to grow. and learn how to operate outside your comfort zone and make sure you keep putting freedom first. There's our challenge to you. Hope you have a wonderful week. It is a beautiful day, as I said, here in the Ozark Mountains. Get out and enjoy yourself on these lovely spring days. Spring is here, so go out and enjoy it. Enjoy life and have a great one. I will see you next week.